When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. CYMBIOTIKA.com.
The Podcast Playground.
Hooray! Well, this is Buzz Knight, the host of Taking a Walk, Music History on Foot. And you could follow us wherever you find your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, The Podcast Playground. And kindly share it with a friend and leave a review. Today we have a very special virtual guest, the best-selling novelist of so many great stories, Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, Shutter Island. His great novels turned into amazing movies. Dennis Lehane. His new book is called Small Mercies, and it's described as a jaw-dropping thriller set in the days of the 1974 Boston school segregation crisis. We'll welcome Dennis Lehane next on Taking a Walk. Well, Dennis, thanks for being on Taking a Walk, and congratulations on the release of the new book, Small Mercies.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thank you.
So take us back, if you can, to what it was like literally taking a walk through those Dorchester neighborhoods back in 1974, those big row houses and everything. What was that like?
I mean, it was for me as a kid, it was wonderful right up until you started to see the graffiti. And then you'd start to see, I mean, imagine seeing KKK in Boston. That to me is just burned into my memory. You'd see kill all the N-words. You'd see N-words stay out. It was a crazy, crazy time. This was, you know, Vietnam was winding down. Nixon had just resigned. I mean, it was a pretty historic summer. And that's the same summer they desegregated the, you know, the public schools.
And Bill Russell, as a great leader for the Boston Celtics, often talked about the difficulty of being an African-American during that period, too, correct?
Yeah, yeah. It was, I think if you were, look, there were two very clear issues that were happening in Boston that summer. One was desegregation, which absolutely had to happen. It had been delayed for 9 years. The Boston School Committee had blocked it for 9 years. And it had to happen, and it had to happen right then, and it had to happen, you know, without question. And then there was the other issue, which was the method by which was busing. And it being with, I believe that if the suburbs had stuck with it and they pulled out at the 11th hour and left Garrity and the neighborhoods holding the bag, I believe that if it had been a countywide desegregation of all schools, that it would have been a raging success. But because it was dropped into the poorer neighborhoods, like Southie, like Dorchester, like Charlestown, it gave them, A, one more reason to feel as if the powers that be were telling them what they were going to do, whether they wanted it or not. And B, it stoked a racism that had been lying, not dormant, but I think quiet and until that moment. And then it just exploded. It just was like ripping the Band-Aid off a scar.
What was the soundtrack musically during that period that you recall, either listening on the radio or what was popular then?
Oh, on the radio. Yeah, it's even in the book. It was Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, I remember, was a big song that summer. I think there was things like, you know, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, I think, was a big hit. It was like Tony Orlando and Don and stuff like that was big. Maybe Seasons in the Sun might have been around that time. I'm just reaching back here, you know. My mom would listen to WHDH, Jess Kane on WHDH, because they had this every hour. They would give you a number. I'll never forget this. And they would give you this number. It would be like, say, 1038.33. And it was the magic number, and you would call in. And if you could get through the busy signal, which you never could, you were the 10th caller, you would win that money. And they would give this away every hour on the hour. So my mother constantly had WHDH on. So whatever was the crappy pop songs of that time, I knew them all.
And there were some bad ones, right?
There were some really bad ones. They're still stuck in my head.
But it's an interesting backdrop to such a crazy period that the book focuses on, with that, you know, that pop music and, you know, just that really tense period.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very it's a very strange thing to see people who wave at you and smile at you and are your, you know, which, you know, I live right over the border with Southie in Dorchester. I was the first neighborhood south of South Boston. And to see these people who, you know, would help shovel your walk if you asked them to, you know, I mean, just, you know, good, solid people. And then simultaneously, those people are throwing rocks at buses with school children in them. And you can't get your head around that at 9. It's hard enough to get your head around that at 20. And I don't know. It's a very strange thing to try. And I watch my kids go through this now. How do you reconcile not only the bad that's in good people, but the good that's in bad people? Like, how do you connect those two? You know, I think it's a lifelong process.
And your inspirations as a writer really have always gone to themes of crime and corruption and intensity. So I have to think, at 9 years old, that's one of the things that happened that really shaped you around Small Mercies.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, you're. I think when I was writing this book, one of the things that was really surprising to me was it's a dark book. It's a dark book. It drops the hammer and it just keeps going and it never stops. It's like it's a one way, you know, elevator drop to hell in a lot of ways. But writing it was a really pleasant experience. It was uplifting. Because I was purging a lot. And I was purging a lot of things that 9-year-old me had needed to purge. And so I started to feel this overwhelming sadness as I was writing the book. And I realized that I was really just trying to process my own sadness at that age, because I just couldn't make sense of any of this, you know? And the level of vitriol. I mean, we're Bostonians, right? Buzz, are you from here?
I've lived here much of my life. I'm originally from Connecticut, but I've been here since the early 90s.
Got it. So I grew up in Boston. One of the things that is really common, because it's such an immigrant-based culture, is, you know, they have a common way of saying, oh, the Poles, oh, the Irish, oh, the Jews, oh, the Italians, right? You know, because it's very European in that way. And there's something kind of with a soft eye roll, and it's there's almost a sweetness to it in a strange way, you know? That sweetness disappears when they say, oh, the Blacks. Completely disappears. And then they're not using the word black. And there was, I think I was shocked by that, because at first when I was nine, I thought it was all part of the same stew. But what busing did was say, no, that you wouldn't be reacting this way if they were busing in Italian kids from, you know, if it was a neighborhood's rights issue and they had decided to switch the population, say, of South Boston High and Revere High, so that you're switching Italian American kids with Irish American kids, would there have been the same level of vitriol? Absolutely not. Would there have been a legitimate anger over, hey, you're forcing us to do something that we don't want to do? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But it wouldn't have reached this level of rage. That was particular to African Americans coming into our neighborhoods, is how they looked at it.
Do you feel Boston is ever going to shake this?
No. That's the real legacy of this. Is because I was nine, I'm sitting there and I'm going, what are we doing? What are we doing on the CBA? What is Walter Cronkite doing talking about my city? It was national. You have to understand how big it was. It was leading the national news every night for weeks was the busing crisis. And they started having to bring in state troopers, you know, and they started to have to bring in the city cops to escort these buses up the hill. That was national news. And so everybody looked and we became a symbol of East Coast racism. And that's, I don't think the city will ever shake it. Maybe 100 years from now. But we're talking, you know, I'm writing about it almost 50 full years after it happened. And it's, you know, it's right there, like very fresh in the rearview mirror.
Could you go back in time and give your younger self writing advice maybe? That you would sort of consider?
No, because I got great writing advice, you know, very young, I was 16, you know, and the first thing I ever taught was, you know, write what you know. And what that means is, that doesn't mean if you come from a family that has a dry cleaning business, that you write about a family from a dry cleaning, you know, you write about the dry cleaning business. It means write about what you know. It means that most universal things will have happened to you by the time you're a certain age. You'll have had your heart broken. You'll have lost your illusions. You'll have understood both the taste of victory and the sting of defeat. You will know all of these things that are super important to every human being. That's what write what you know means. It doesn't mean, you know, my dad was a foreman at Sears and Roebuck. Write about Sears and Roebuck. No, you know, it means write about your broken heart, write about your disillusionment, write about your triumphs, write about your happy moments, whatever, you know, through the filter of characters, through the filter of other things. And I got that lesson very young. I also grew up clearly in a very interesting time. And if you grow up in a very interesting time, you're given a gift as a writer in an interesting time, in an interesting place, I think. You know, people say how, you know, I get credit for both characters and dialogue. And I'm like, if you grew up in my neighborhood and listened to the way people spoke and looked at how just wonderfully nuts everybody was, you'd write good characters too. It's not all that hard, you know? So.
Do you go back there ever?
I go back a ton, but I haven't been back because of COVID. I used to go back every single year. Every single year, I'd take my daughters to a Red Sox game. I'd see all my buddies. And then COVID hit, and I haven't done it. But the last time I was there, something truly magical happened, which was I took my daughters and my wife, and we went by the house where I grew up. And it was literally moving trucks on the street. And everybody was the people who had been living there since my dad sold it were moving out because the house had sold. And I walked up with my daughters, who were little at the time, and said, hey, how you doing? I grew up here. Can I take a look? And they were like, sure. They didn't care. They were leaving. And I walked in and I took my daughters to every room in the house and I can still remember they were running around from room to room and just saying, Daddy used to play with Uncle Jerry here. Daddy used to, you know, it was fantastic. Wow. That was just the greatest gift. Those people were so kind. And the guy said to me, oh, I got to ask you something. I've wanted to know this for years. And he opened up this door, and on the other side of the door was a wall. And he said, what's there? And I said, a staircase. And he was like, there's a staircase on the other side of that wall. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know why the guy threw up a wall. I don't know why the owner threw up a wall, but yeah, there's a staircase right there.
Amazing.
It was magic. It was magic. That was the last time I was in Boston. So
in closing, Dennis, as we think of our divided country today, what lessons are in small mercies that apply now?
We're all idiots. We're all the same idiots. Stop acting like that your anger is special, that your unhappiness is special. Stop trying to wrap it into something, some sort of movement, and just accept that we're all the same idiotic species. And I don't care what color you are. I don't care what your ideology is. I don't care what your religion is. We're all the same idiots. And I really feel like if you could get there, you know, it's one of my favorite lines is from a movie I love called Bull Durham, you know, and he says, why are you so nervous? And he says, because my dad's in the stands. And Costner says, he's your dad. He's as full of shit as anyone. I love that. You know what I mean? That's just like, where's all just, let's, we need to, I mean, when your ideology allows you to pick up an AR-15, a machine gun, and go shoot a bunch of children in a mall, your ideology is bullshit. Like, it just, it needs to stop. It needs to stop to just, we need to stop with the rage and the hate. And I think that starts by just saying, you know, we're all the same. We're all the same. And we're not, we're a couple of steps above and the rest of the animals. Like, not by much, you know? It just, ease up, man. Live your life. Let people live their life. Let people enjoy their lives and protect their kids. That's it. And that's the only advice I got. And Bobby in the book, Small Mercy, says something very similar along those lines. You know,
you're amazing. Your work's amazing. I'm grateful that I had you on. And congratulations on Small Mercies.
Thank you so much, Buzz.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.